Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here with us. Today is my greatest pleasure to have on Zeta Radio Jeff Biggs, CTO of the Open Robotics Foundation. So, Jeff, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you very much for having accepted our invitation. So the plan is, you know, to learn a little bit more about the Open Software Foundation for Robotics, or SRF. And but before getting there, can you please just quickly introduce yourself?
Okay, so I'm Jeff Biggs. I'm currently the CTO of the Open Source Robotics Foundation. We're more commonly known as Open Robotics. I think that's probably the name most people know us by. It's more of an umbrella term, really, for all of our activities. And so I work at the foundation along with Vanessa, our CEO, to steward many open source projects for robotics, mostly open source software, of course, that being in the name. So we do ROS, which is the most popular one, I think, probably the one most people know about, the robot operating system. It's a massive middleware project, very federated, so it's very spread out, but huge number of packages, but lots of functionality for building robot applications. But we also have Gazebo, which is a simulator. It allows you to test your robots in simulation, make sure your software works before you put it on the hardware and break your expensive robot. We also have a third tentpole project called OpenRMF, which is designed for sort of like the next layer up from your robot itself. It provides fleet management of robots. So that's broadly our three major projects that we currently have. And so I am responsible for the technological stewardship of those projects and making sure they have everything they need to keep going. I also manage part of our infrastructure. So we provide a lot of infrastructure to the community that the community uses for building packages, for doing CI, continuous integration, to make sure their packages build properly, test properly, and so on. Yeah. Providing those packages to people to download and install without having to compile themselves and so on. And so we have a team of volunteer staff led by the awesome Stephen Ragnarok, who they're dealing with all the problems that come up when you're dealing with massive cloud compute systems and so on. And so I'm also responsible for trying to make sure that they can keep doing what they're doing and providing what the community needs.
Yeah, so one of the points I want to make, it's all that people always see usually the tip of the iceberg. So they see the great software, they enjoy the software, they don't realize the effort that there is behind in building it, making sure that it runs on the various platform, testing it. I mean, it's humongous effort, and it's
hidden all side. The huge open source projects, Linux, kernel, ROS, KDE, Debian, Red Hat. I guess Red Hat's more of an IBM thing now, but all these big open source projects, they all actually have a hell of a lot of stuff going on behind them.
So lots of people are familiar with ROS2, perhaps with Open Robotics, right? But ROS2 is really perhaps your most visible project, but there are lots of things, as you just explained, that are actually contributed by the Open Robotics. But Open Robotics also has a fascinating history behind it, right? So can you share that with our listeners? Because maybe not all of them know where Open Robotics came from, how ROS came about to be, and so on. And it's always beautiful to have a retrospective and see where everything got started.
Yeah, it's fascinating how linked in everything is and how small the number of people involved at the start were compared with how big it is now. I mean, now it's like thousands and thousands of people are involved in all this stuff going on. But, this goes back 24 years is when open source software for robotics really got its start. So a person by the name of Brian Gerke, who I'm sure people are fairly familiar with, was at one of the universities of California. I think it was the one in LA, or one of them anyway. They have so many. He was working there doing his PhD, and alongside some other people, such as Richard Vaughan and Nick Koenig, they were trying to improve the software for their robots, and they came up with this tool they called Player and a simulator they called Stage. And they used these to improve their robots. And then they got very popular. It was used for quite a number of years. And at one point, it was basically used by every paper in the conferences and so on. And then eventually, it just kind of got out of date and people moved on. And then about 10 years after that, well, actually not even that long, maybe 7 or 8 years after that, at Stanford, some people started a project they called Switchyard, I think it was. And it was a new robot middleware, which was designed to provide a more flexible approach to basically developing robot software. So Player was very much a client and server-based architecture. whereas the switchyard thing was based on graphs. And so you'd have these nodes in the graph, which do the computation, and they'll talk to each other over edges. And then in, I think it was 2007 or 2000, early 2008, Willow Garage was founded by one of the early people from Google. And he provided with a mission and a large budget to accomplish that mission. And one of the things they did was they brought in the Switchyard project from Stanford and the people who had worked on it, one of them being Morgan Quigley. And they basically took that project and built on it and extended it and turned it into what became ROS. This was ROS 1 back then. And they built all these tools for it. They built all these wonderful visualization tools and debugging tools. They extended the existing simulator stage and also Gazebo, which had also come out of the same place that Player and Stage did. And they tied it all together into a wonderful federated ecosystem, which made things really easy to use. And this was just like a revelation in how people could build robots. And so that became ROS and Gazebo. This was just used for things like the PR2, which was a massive research robot, very popular because it was so powerful and so amazing at the time. And Willow Garage promoted all of this and provided it as open source, just freely to the community to use. And because of that, it made things easy and it was free. People used it, started building increasingly amazing robot applications on it, first in research, but then eventually people started doing companies on it. Willow Garage itself had a few companies spin out. One of them, Fetch Robotics, was recently acquired by a very large corporation. And they were very successful in building warehouse robots. Another company started in Canada, ClearPath Robotics, who I'm sure many people probably know. That was founded to do research robots. And then they also started up a separate sort of sibling company called Otto Motors, doing warehouse robots and factory robots. And this was all built on ROS as well. And that was also recently acquired for probably, I assume, a very large sum because, it was a very, very successful company. And all of this was enabled because of the tools that Willow Garage provided to the community for free, and they made high quality tools that you could use. However, unfortunately, Willow Garage, eventually that funding ran out and it was shut down. But before it did that, they spun out ROS and Gazebo into the Open Source Robotics Foundation, which was a nonprofit that they founded in California in 2012, I believe is the founding date. And the purpose of this foundation was basically to steward these projects and to continue developing them with whatever funding they could find. And then a year or two after that, the foundation started a child company, a commercial company, for profit, with the goal of doing consulting engineering. And the purpose of that was to basically use that consulting engineering income to fund the development of the open source tools for robotics. And so that became the source of funding for ROS and Gazebo. And that went on for quite some time. 2014, they started ROS 2, and things just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then at the end of last year, the Open Source Robotics Corporation, which was the for-profit child company, was acquired by Intrinsic. There's a company from the Alphabet Group. They're doing manipulation robots for factories, doing some very advanced stuff there. And so the OSRC was acquired by them, and the OSRF was intended to then go on and become a much bigger, much more active player in the stewardship of the projects, ROS and Gazebo, and by this point, OpenRMF as well. And so that's where we are now. We've just about just under a year since the acquisition of OSRC and our massive change in the way we're doing things at the OSRF. And so, we're now at the point where ROS is a huge project. There's thousands of users. There are hundreds of companies using it. We are aware of at least 800 companies in the world who are building products on ROS. Some of them very big. Companies like Bosch are ones that I can say, obviously, but there are also a lot of companies, big and small, that have got products they've released, like Sony, or some that have not made their products publicly known yet. And that's just incredible. And they're using ROS to build these products. ROS runs in the products. They use Gazebo to simulate them. Many of them are starting to use OpenRMF to do the fleet management of these robots. It's just incredible how big this has got from just a few people at Stanford starting the software 15 years ago.
That's quite epic. And that's how it always goes in these cases, right? And I think another aspect that is, I think, quite important for our listeners to appreciate. I mean, then the robotics industry, and still even 10 years ago, was very fragmented, essentially based around proprietary software, very heterogeneous. And if you were a student, I mean, it was almost impossible to get your hands on anything to play around with a robot, or very, very, very expensive.
Yeah, one and of so, the early yeah. things did that, one of the early purposes that was given for Ross was to solve what they called the PhD problem, which that yeah. every PhD student does start, they'll spend like 2 years building their robot and programming it, and then they'd actually do their research for another 2 years, and then they left, and then no one knew how to use that robot anymore, so just sat in a room and did nothing. And, you know, that's went over and over again. And Ross enabled things to be reused and kept on going. And like you say, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the robotics industry was very fragmented and dominated by proprietary large players like ABB and KUKA, who have been doing it for decades, right? Really, the almost revolution that we're seeing in robotics now, the explosion in robotics applications that are becoming possible as commercial entities, is all down to Ross and Gazebo and OpenRMF and what the people at Willow Garage started.
Yeah. And I think there is another aspect that is interesting, you know, pondering upon. So I would also argue that one of the key roles that the Open Robotics had in evolving robotics platform was to bring, I would say, the perspective of software engineers and software engineering into robotics. Oh, because yes. most of platforms were built by robotics engineer. And, you know, I think that in terms of you know, the approach that was taken and eventually, you know, the kind of innovation that were brought in. So it was kind of a next wave, a new wave. And I would say, you know, a stronger softwareization, if you may, of robotics platform. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, even ROS1 itself was mostly developed and grown by the majority of the developers of that at Willow Garage were roboticists. And then when the Open Source Robotics Foundation started the ROS2 effort, actually a much larger proportion of the people working on that were software engineers by training rather than roboticists. And so that brought in a big improvement in the APIs that are available, the flexibility of the software, the ability for it to be maintained and to scale. And so on. Yeah. And sure, ROS2 has problems as well, that we all admit that. No software is perfect, but yeah. it did, because it had that software engineering point of view as well as the robotics point of view, it really made a lot more things possible.
I think that's something that sometimes people underestimate, but we see it in, you know, in certain industries. But sometimes using a framework that doesn't, I would say, internalizes those architectural principles, right, that usually yeah. you know, are our bed and breakfast in software engineering, you know, does its job, but creates problems with respect to, you know, how easy it is then to extend when your team big grows and so on and so forth. So yeah. Something that we have seen, at least personally have seen as a trend, you know, it's clear ROS Robotics, ROS2 had an orientation a little bit toward mobile robots, but we are seeing adoption of ROS at least in R&D, in automotive. So what's your take on that? Will ROS be driving cars?
That's interesting, you see. So we've seen ROS being used in the automotive sector for quite a number of years now, really. However, it's always been in prototypes. So ROS 1 in particular was better for prototypes than products. It was really good for getting things up and running quickly and testing out your ideas and making sure you could have a great system before you then went off and made it all stable and, you know, well, good enough to be sold, basically. And so we've actually seen companies like BMW, for example, and Toyota and other similar companies, they've been using ROS for quite a while to do their prototypes of things like autonomous driving and driver assistance and so on. But I think probably from going forward from now, I think we're going to see more of an increase in these systems actually being built on ROS in one form or another. So there is a company called Apex.ai. They're based in Silicon Valley, I believe, yes. And so they actually have a safety certified version of ROS2. And their system has been certified to SIL-D, I think. ACLD of the ISO 26262 standard for automotive safety. And so their goal is to provide this system to automotive companies who are building driver assistance systems, software-defined cars, autonomous driving vehicles, and so on, with the goal of allowing them to have all the advantages that ROS brings to development, the flexibility and the speed and the ability to debug things easily, but still have it be in the meeting the safety requirements of the automotive sector. And they have been massively successful over the past 4 or 5 years. They've grown hugely because there's just so much demand for it. The automotive sector, they see the desire for more autonomous systems, more automated systems, more assistance systems from the people who are buying the vehicles, and they want to meet that, but they need the software support to do that because their software support just wasn't good enough. It was all based around having 15 or 30 MCUs in the car spread all over the place, one for the rear traffic lights and one for the brake system and so on. Whereas that's not the way things have gone. And so they want to have the advantages they see roboticists getting in the automotive sector as well. And so there's a huge amount of potential there. In fact, several autonomous driving startups use ROS internally, sometimes modified, sometimes not. And there's even the Autoware Foundation, which is
Indeed.
a nonprofit for software called the Autoware Project, which is an open source autonomous driving system built on ROS, which is very good for prototyping new autonomous driving technologies and testing out ideas.
Absolutely. So it's something else that for me is also fascinating because, we have gotten into the world of certification to one way or another. And it's kind of a cultural shock for someone coming from open source, right? Because if you're in open source, the one thing that you care above anything else is the quality of your code. And usually, our mantra is the truth is the code. Okay. There's nothing else. And there is, I think, a very good engineering principle behind it, because as soon as you start introducing, extra documentation besides what you have in the code, you risk divergence. You risk divergence. It adds a lot of overhead. And usually, what we want to focus is on having great software. And if you look at certification, certification really is about documentation and process. And so, for us, it's kind of shocking because it feels like the emphasis, right, is more on producing evidences that you have followed the process rather than producing evidences that your software is great software. So this is probably not, we should make another podcast on this. But something that for me will be quite interesting to speculate is how open source is going to change also the world of certification. Because I think that there are lots of lessons learned in terms of how to build quality software, right, from the open source world. And if you look at some of, super successful project like Linux, it's arguably, right, one of the most robust operating system in the world, but it doesn't follow a very, let's say between quote, industrial. And again, I say that with a pun, industrial, some people will be process, right? So it's something worth speculating, but again, for another podcast, perhaps.
Yeah, I could go on about that at great length as well. So maybe
Yeah,
next
I
time.
would be super interesting. Yes. Maybe we could do a kind of panel, right? Bringing some certification. Yeah, so that would be fun. Maybe it's an idea for an upcoming podcast. So, Jeff, what do you consider the three greatest achievements of the Open Robotics Foundations?
I think undoubtedly the biggest achievement has been ROS itself. So when it was spun out of Willow Garage and the foundation was founded 11 years ago now, the purpose was to make sure that ROS didn't shrivel and die without Willow Garage there. And part of the reason for that is that Willow Garage had over 60 engineers and researchers in the building, many of them working on ROS and contributing to it. And a lot of users out in the world, but not that many contributors. And so part of the foundation's goal was to provide a core of developers while increasing the development done by the community. And we're still very much working on that mission. We're working on it quite hard, but it is getting there already. We see now that we are getting contributions to ROS from places such as iRobot and Sony, Amazon. And these are big companies, very, very heavily invested in using ROS. So, like iRobot, for example, If you buy one of their high-end Roombas now, it will have ROS inside it. And so they have contributed features to ROS, to the open source ROS, to enable them to build high quality, reliable, commercial customer-focused products on ROS, using very low resource hardware as well. And so, for example, another one is Sony. The most recent version of the iVo uses ROS inside it, and they have many other products now that are robotic and are using ROS. And so these companies have come along and started contributing to ROS, not just because they see the community, but because they see the OSRF is there standing behind it and making sure that ROS remains available and is not locked down by any one company or anything like that, right? And so that's been a massive one. Say another one is Gazebo, because Gazebo is, it's often not spoken about very much, but it's such a vital tool for a robot developer, is to have this simulator that allows you to very rapidly test robot software on your computer at your desk without having to go and load into a hardware robot, make sure the battery is charged and make sure the environment is safe and no one's going to get hurt and the robot won't get broken or anything like that, right? Yeah. Gazebo has made that possible. And the work that the OSRF has done, finding funding to develop Gazebo and then doing that development, Gazebo has very much been a foundation-led project, much more so than ROS. And that has enabled not just a lot of what robotics is possible of doing now with the all the benefits ROS brings and Gazebo bringing to development, but it's also shown the benefits of simulator to so many people who would not have thought of that maybe. And in part, I believe that Gazebo is partly responsible for the explosion in simulators that are now available for many types of robotics. There are ones for good simulators for autonomous driving, good simulators for warehouse robots, and so on. And so that's been a massive benefit of the foundation, is keeping those two projects. But it doesn't stop there. OpenRMF is a third major achievement. And part of the reason I say it is because OpenRMF was started from scratch by the OSRF. It wasn't something that came out of Willow Garage or earlier. OpenRMF was started by the foundation to meet a recognized need in Singapore to do fleet management of robots where there were many fleets that had to collaborate together, because if they didn't collaborate, those robots would then start causing traffic jams and getting stuck because they're all on different fleet managers. And so this was something that the foundation recognized along with the government of Singapore and started a project to solve it. And now that project is actually, although not very widely known at the moment, it's actually very popular and probably the one we've received the most queries about. And so I think that is probably the one of the most important successes, is the foundation has shown that its ability to identify new needs in robotics and start open source projects to resolve them.
And by the way, so something else that, in open source, some people sometimes underestimate or don't even maybe reflect too much upon, but it's the importance of having a foundation behind an open source project. It's like, the guardians of the galaxy, right? Equivalent of open source in terms of governance, in terms of ensuring that, there is a status quo that is maintained, as you mentioned before, making sure that, this doesn't get too much biased by company X or Y. Can you just, share some thought with our listeners about that? Because some people think, yeah, it's on GitHub, it's open source, great.
Yeah, so the foundation is kind of like, it's kind of like the secret service in that people don't really know what we do. They just know that we exist. And they see the project and they see they can use it for free and they can send in pull requests and raise issues and so on. And they think that's all awesome. They don't realize how much stuff actually goes on in the background. So there's all sorts of stuff that has to be done there. We have to, the most important one being coordination and governance, right? We have to make sure that there are processes in place to ensure that the community can collaborate effectively, not devolve into arguments and debates all the time, but actually be collaborative and come to a reasonable solutions together and move the project forward. There's also a huge amount of back-end infrastructure to run a software project. And so you look at any big open source project, the Debian project, the Linux kernel, KDE, and of course, ROS and Gazebo and OpenRMF, all of these projects have a huge amount of computing infrastructure and internet infrastructure behind them to manage them. There are software repositories, there are websites, there are mailing lists, there are forums, there are continuous integration systems, all in the cloud, package building, package distribution, testing, and so on. All of this stuff has to be done by someone. And one of the drawbacks of the open source community is it attracts the engineers who want to build cool stuff, but they don't realize how much other work has to be done in order to build the cool stuff. And so that's what the foundation does, is it provides all that other stuff that allows engineers to do the fun parts, basically. And so we have, you know, we've got a team of volunteers and engineers that we hire through the foundation who spend their full-time jobs working together to basically make sure all of our infrastructure keeps going, that provide all these services that the people using ROS and Gazebo and OpenRF need to develop and use these projects.
Going back to the importance of the foundation and the key role that it has, so how the community can support the foundation to continue to be successful, right? Because once again, I always say that open source is a matter of responsibility also with respect to the community, right? Because there are lots of people that contribute out of their free time. There are some people that are funded by some companies, but you take, you should give back. So, you know, what should the community give back, the community of users, to, and how could they support the Open Robotics Foundation?
So, I mean, with open source software, you know, the first thing people think of when they think about giving back is, I think, I'm going to go and implement a feature or fix a bug. And that's obviously the most obvious way people can contribute to the Open Source Robotics Foundation and to our project. You can go and join in the development of ROS, add a new feature or fix a bug that's annoying you. If it's annoying you, it's almost certainly annoying other people as well. And so that's a contribution. And those are very important. You know, we really depend on people doing that development work, because otherwise the software would just stagnate. But there's so many other ways that you can contribute that even if you're not a software engineer, you can still contribute in so many ways. You know, the obvious one, of course, filing issues. That's important. Just running tests. If you find a problem, raise an issue about the test that failed and how it failed so that we know there's a problem there. Documentation is such a big one on open source. It's always a problem for every project is the software engineers like writing the software. They don't like writing the documentation on how to use it. And I understand that. I'm a software engineer. You know, I don't like writing documentation either. It's pretty dull to do.
Yes.
And then you have to keep updating it every time the software changes, right? It's tough. But it's very important. And writing good documentation is a skill. And there are a lot of people out there who may not be very good at software development, but they're very good at writing documentation or tutorials, you know, telling people how to use things, teaching people how to use things via documentation, and just contributing new tutorials and new documentation, API documentation, whatever. You know, that sort of thing is a major contribution. There's also the community aspect, you know, going out, telling your friends about ROS, telling your colleagues about ROS, showing your colleagues that ROS can be used to solve a problem that you have in the company. You know, things like this, they help because that increases the users of ROS. And in the long term, more users of ROS means more contributors to ROS. And the same for Gazebo and OpenRF and any other open source project in robotics, like MoveIt or Nev2 or whatever. So that's very important. And you know, if you're a company, you can give your engineers some time to contribute back to ROS if they find problems with it or they find a feature they need. You know, if you develop a feature internally as ROS, you develop a new feature for ROS that you want to use, don't keep it to yourself, open source it, because not only does that give it to everyone else to use, everyone else will then maintain it for you, so you don't have to maintain it yourself in the long term, right? That's always a good thing. In the long run, we do need money as well. It's kind of a sad fact that the world does run on money. You know, we have to pay for cloud service, we have to pay for all the CI systems and so on. And so, you know, if nothing else, donating to the OpenRF, Open Source Robotics Foundation, is a really good way to help out. You know, we have at our website, openrobotics.org, there's a donation page if you want to make a small donation. If you're a big company, you know, you can always make a tax-deductible big donation. Any way to give money to us is also helping the foundation and its mission and helping the projects go on for just a little bit longer. Everyone can find some way to contribute to open source software, and I really encourage anyone to try.
Yeah, and I mean, even translation, right? We see, for instance, localization is quite important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all our documentation is mostly in English, but some of it's in Japanese or French or whatever. But it'd be great if all of it was in many languages now.
For instance, yeah. So where do you see open robotics going forward?
I think that, I hope, I guess. We are a non-profit, so, you know, we always... Vanessa especially, always running around trying to make sure that we have enough money to pay for all the services we provide and pay for all the people we need and so on. But I do hope that we are going to continue to grow. And I think that we are on a good path now. So we've had nearly a year since the RSRC was acquired. And the RSSC was our primary source of income until it was acquired by Intrinsic. And now we are moving much more to a more traditional nonprofit model. And so I think that's actually going to put us in a really strong position to go forward as a real community-focused leader of open source software and robotics. So we currently have our three major projects, ROS Gazebo and OpenRMF, but I do believe that we are going to grow. We're going to get more projects inboard into the foundation so we can be basically a non-biased community steward of any project that's relevant products. There's so much stuff in robotics that is important on the software side, not just the middleware or the simulator or the there's navigation, there's manipulation, there's documentation, of course, and document and tutorial projects, image recognition, AI, all that sort of stuff. I do believe that the number of projects we manage is going to grow over the years. And with that, so is our ability to manage those projects and keep them alive. And we really are on a solid path now to providing a long-term self-sustaining ecosystem of open source robot software. And that really is the core of our mission at OSRF. And I think is that's what we're going to be going forward. We're going to be the place you go to if you want to find good quality, widely used open source software for robotics applications and all the other tangentially related applications as well.
Okay, cool. So some kind of Linux foundation of robotics in a way, right? Yeah,
I
to
hope so,
translate.
yeah. I mean, I
Yeah.
don't know what form it'll take exactly yet, but we are working in that direction, and I think we're going to be really be a very community-focused organization, making sure that the software is developed by the community, for the community, to the benefit of the community.
And I think that would be very important because all of a sudden, helps growing the community. Helps growing the support, as you just mentioned, in all the directions and the different technological access that are relevant for robotics application. Yeah, so quite, yeah. Okay, so in that respect, right, suppose that there was a genie and you had three questions, what would you ask?
Oh, these wishes are always so difficult, right? Because if you don't ask them exactly right, you get a backfire on you. But it always that way in the movies, right? Anyway,
That, yeah.
so I think probably the first thing I'd want would be a huge amount of money in order to hire document writers. Because I think as good as our software is, it's no good if people don't know how to use it. And people only know how to use it if we have good documentation. And I would love to be able to just make all the documentation problems just go away so that the software engineers can just do good software and the documentation just magically happens, And then everyone is very happy because they know how to use the good software and software engineers get to make good software that people use. That'd be pretty cool. So I guess the second wish would be basically that we are able to be sustainable, keep on going for the long term, because I do believe that as robotics becomes more and more important in the world, I really do believe that open source is going to be right at the core of that and supporting that ability of robotics to be everywhere in the world and solve so many problems. And there's so many different ways that robotics can improve our lives and our civilization, not just in the Western world. We see companies like Zipline delivering blood in Africa in like 1% of the time it usually takes to deliver blood to hospitals by car. They do it by drone. And they're saving lives every day. And that's enabled by robotics. So things like that. And I want the Open Source Robotics Foundation to be able to keep on promoting the stuff that supports those missions for as long as possible, without anything cropping up and getting in the way. So that'd definitely be a pretty important wish, I think. And a third wish, I don't know, I've kind of got those two. I'm pretty happy already. But I
Take
guess
the
a third
third one.
for the world to really fall in love with contributing to open source software. I think that would benefit not just us, but every other field as well. I think as nice and important as proprietary software can be in certain fields, I do believe that open source software is so much better because it benefits everyone. It's that whole, it's the phrase about the rising tide lifting all boats thing, right? If you make your software for yourself, it helps you. And then you have to maintain it yourself, and that costs you money. And you have to keep on maintaining it, you have to keep on developing it, and so on. If you make it open source, other people start using it, but they also start maintaining it for you and they help you. And then all of a sudden, we're all helping each other build better tools and better things to help us in our daily lives, And I think just to see the world continue to adopt open source software, it would benefit not just the Open Source Robotics Foundation and not just robotics, but you know, everyone, I think. And so that would really be.
I mean, if I recall, you know, when I was a young student of engineering, Linux was very, very young, right?
I remember.
Back then, you still had to compile the kernel, right, to enable the networking card, and you had to set up the right jumpers on the network.
Oh, yeah, but, trying to get my networking driver to work in Linux.
Right, but I mean, how happy was I to be able to look inside the kernel?
Yes, that was huge, right? You could actually see what was going on when things started going wrong. And then you could fix them yourself. You didn't have to wait for the next software release for a hope that
learn,
bug, right?
Right? As a young student, all of a sudden, right, I had some pretty, because the kernel, I mean, it's some pretty, pretty interesting software that all of a sudden, you know, you can read the code, you can learn. I mean, it was great, right? And I mean, now people are used to it, but, you know, especially youngsters. But for those that leave this transition, you know, from completely closed software, in which, you know, perhaps if you were working for AT&T, you would see a Unix implementation or for Solaris, up to, you know, open source. And now, essentially, anything you want to learn, right, you have, you know, reference of software that is available there, written by super talented engineers, right? That not only is useful for, you know, for doing things, but for learning. And I think that aspect is sometimes, you know, forgotten, but it's very, very important.
The educational aspect of open source software. And I think all of my abilities as a software engineer, and it's not just the coding, it's the ability to work with others, the ability to make good pull requests, to, you know, make good bug reports, to write good tests. All of that I've learned through open source software. You know, I've been doing open source software for 20 years now. And every time I make a new pull request, I'm going to learn something because people make comments on my software code, and together we'll figure out how to make it better, and we all learn from that. And I really think that educational aspect of just participating in open source software is often forgotten. But I really believe that so many young software engineers, especially in university and high school, being asked to participate in open source software and then proactively doing it, I think they would benefit so much from that, and it would make them better software engineers. It would make them more hireable. You know, sometimes it's said these days that your resume is now your GitHub page, right? Your GitHub profile page, because you'll see what you're doing. And so that definitely helps. Yeah. And definitely we see this already in the web world, right? With all the web application development and so on, that's very heavily open source focused now. And so for a lot of people, just like all the stuff they've been involved in helps them get jobs, it helps them contribute back easily, helps them learn more. And so I think in every other industry would benefit from the same way. You know, software engineers participate in open source, they benefit from it, they learn from it, and everyone just grows together.
Indeed. Jeff, it was great pleasure to have you on.
It was
great. So thank you very much. I mean, hopefully, you know, we'll be able to have some other exchange, I don't know, in 6 months. You reach out when you have, you know, anything that you want to discuss or share with us and with our audience.
Yeah.
And so, you know, good luck with the Open Robotics Foundations. Keep on with the great work. And thank you very much.
Thank you too. It was very nice being here.
Thank you. Bye, Jeff.
Goodbye.